Hello, everyone. Domino's here. There's a sound you should get used to. That's right. We love our customers, and we're not above a little kissing up. And that's why we have a ridiculously good deal. We're giving you half off all pizzas when you order online. Go to Domino's.com, select the coupon, and get all pizzas 50% off menu price. But hurry. It's only valid through December 2nd. Oh, yes, we did. Online only through December 2nd at participating locations. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary. Offer applies to the pizza portion of your order only.
Gator fans, get ready for another duly noted podcast with your host, veteran sports writer, Pat Dooley.
Okay, and welcome into another edition of the Duly Noted Podcast. This is both a postcast and a precast because it's Thanksgiving, and like everybody else, I'm going to try to enjoy Thanksgiving and not be doing another podcast. But really, I can wrap it all up into two because there's not a whole lot to talk about from last week's game against Idaho. Obviously, it couldn't have gone any better. That's what I wrote about, and that's what I think everybody kind of felt. Everybody had a great time at the game. It seemed like just watching the opportunity to watch your team destroy a bad team, and they're bad. They've dropped down to FCS. They're 63 scholarships, and there were times when you looked over there at Idaho's bench, and it felt like they only had about eight guys over there, and the guys that they have aren't very good. Obviously, they're 4-7 to finish their season. But the other thing was to watch that, but then also get to watch some of the young players. And you certainly felt good for walk-ons and the like that got to play in that game. The Gators won that game. And I was thinking about this before the game, that before the season, I said I thought Florida was an 8-4 team. And last year I said I thought Florida was a 9-3 team, but that was before the knucklehead nine and everything that went bad there. And that still, even with the knucklehead nine, could have been a 9-3 team. Let's not forget where they were before they lost by a point to LSU and 2 points to A&M. They could easily have won both those games. Now, it all went terrible after that. But when I looked at this year's schedule, I said this team should be 8-4. Vegas, I think, had them at 7.5 as the over-under. But when you looked at the schedule, one thing you liked about it was the fact that they had the three gimmies. And they haven't had three gimmies in a while because of all the hurricanes. You know, and don't forget, last year, not only did you have one of the games hurricaned out, but you opened with Michigan instead of, Softy. And this next year, again, you're going to be playing Miami to open season. I don't know how good Miami's going to be because they certainly haven't had a good year this year. But when you look at a team schedule, like I always look at their schedule before I decide what I think the team's going to be. It's one reason people were down on LSU in the preseason. But when I looked at Florida's schedule, I said, well, look, they got the three gimmies. And then they only have to go on the road, true road games, four times all year. You know, one's Vandy and one's a rebuilding Tennessee. So I said, look, this team's going to win eight games. Now, we go back. Let's go back to the second week of the season. And they lose to Kentucky, and they just looked awful. They looked like they got done. I mean, the funny thing is, that was a one-score game. And let's face it, we know what happened at the end, the last play of the game. But it was a one-score game. It was a very close game. Florida made a field goal that was disallowed because of poor eyesight. But still, it felt like Florida was in trouble. They were dominated on both lines of scrimmage. And you just didn't look at that team and go, that's an eight-win team. Now, fast forward ahead, they've got the eight wins. Now they go for the ninth on Saturday. But I think this team right now, as we sit here today, has achieved what I thought they would achieve. And there's nothing to be ashamed of or nothing wrong with achieving what, you know, to a little bit over the Vegas spread, a little bit what I thought. And yet, to quote the former coach, and yet, you know what? Here's the thing. You still got to go beat FSU. I'm not sure that Coach McElwain ever got the FSU importance. He wasn't a rivalry guy. He was just next game guy. And Dan Mullen is somewhere in between. It's pretty clear he's somewhere in between McElwain and Meyer. Like, he's not maniacal about it like Meyer is. You know, putting the logos on the urinal cakes and not saying the name of the school. And the funny thing is, though, he said, I'm not gonna call him that school out west. It's Florida State. Yet he did that when he was at Mississippi. In the state of Mississippi, I mean, Mississippi State. He called them that school up north, or I don't even know, is it north or south? Whatever it was, that other school. And again, I think that's a little bit shows the growth of Dan Mullen as a coach and a person, that he's kind of gotten away from some of the stuff that was crazy about Urban Meyer, like over-the-top nuts, you know? It worked. Nobody's saying it didn't work, and certainly when he was here. But I almost feel like in Dan Mullen, Florida has a more refined version of the Urban Meyer who was here before. The Urban Meyer who's in now Ohio State, I'll get into that in a minute. That's borderline crazy right now. Today on the podcast, I'm going to talk about what this Florida State game means for Florida, and also what a great day it was for college football last Saturday. We'll get into the spreads. We'll get into the top three. But when we take a break, we're going to come back and just touch one more time on the Idaho game and that Florida got to 8 wins. You're listening to the Duly Noted Podcast. Oh, by the way, our special guest today, Steve Spurrier. All right? We'll be right back here on the Duly Noted Podcast at Gatorsports.com.
The Gators are definitely on a roll under Coach Mullen, and next year should be even better. Winning is great for the program, but not for everything. Did you know what winning also does? It creates difficulty finding hotel rooms around game day.
Oh, no.
Most hotels triple their normal rates and charge at least 2 nights minimum.
What?
And if the Gators really start winning, everything will be sold out way in advance.
No! No!
Have you ever thought about owning your own place in Gainesville to use for you and your friends and family on game day weekends? Call Betsy Pepin, the top realtor in Gainesville and sponsor of the Duly Noted Podcast, at 352-226-8474. And she'll help you find that perfect place for whenever you come to Gainesville. And when you're not using the place, she'll Airbnb it and take care of all the details. Betsy makes it easy for you to enjoy game day weekends instead of paying 5-star rates for a 1-star motel. Own your game days next year. Call Gainesville's number one realtor, Betsy Pepin, today. 352-226-8474. 352-226-8474.
Ticket City presents Why You Go to the Game, to see the Florida Gators.
That was the loudest the stadium ever was. That was a South Carolina game that Jarvis Moss blocked the kick to end the game. I had walked over at the Gator Walk, and he came walking through, and I had touched his hand, and then he blocked it with that hand, so I was totally good luck.
Put yourself in the action with Ticket City. Visit Gatorsports.com and click tickets.
You know, one thing that made a really good day is we actually had a tailgate out there for sponsors of the podcast. And so I went out there for a while, also ran to my man Sticks and got a brat from him. Really had a good pregame because it was low key. Everybody was a little low key. Crowd wasn't, there wasn't a lot of juice, but you knew there wasn't going to be any juice for this game. There's not supposed to be. It's Idaho. But right away, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson picks that ball off, and Florida scores in 6 seconds, and we're all like, is that the fastest touchdown in the history of college football? Because that's about the only way – I can't think of a way you could score faster, because a kickoff return is going to take 10 or 11 seconds. And that was certainly kind of set the tone for the whole day. Again, I went back and looked at that play, and – because the first time, when it happened in real life, you're like, wow, he threw it right to him. You go back and look at the play, it's a pretty smart play by Chauncey. And it's one of those things that is making me think about, like, I've got to vote on the AP. I'm voting on the AP All-American. Nobody from Florida's getting on there, I can tell you. There's nobody that's had that good a season to be an All-American. But all SEC, it's still hard to come up with a lot of Florida players because there haven't been these singular, you know, great performances by a player. Who on offense would you consider? You know, I know that Martez Ivey is a guy that graded out 91% against South Carolina. He's a senior. I've watched the guy play all year. I don't think it's been all SEC worthy. You know, I might stick him on the second team. I might, but I haven't sat down and done it all yet. But there are so many really good linemen in this league. Nobody, no receivers, no running backs, certainly not the quarterback, no tight ends. So there goes the offense. Defensively, Ja'Kai Polite might be a second teamer. I think Chauncey, I've got to really think about it and think about the other, but think about the great DBs in this league. You know, I thought about Voshon Joseph a little bit, but really, like, nobody will be on my first team, and I'm the local guy. I can't think that anybody else is. Now, sometimes guys don't take these things very seriously, and they go, well, who's a senior offensive lineman for a team that's done well? And Florida has done well. They've certainly done well. When you look at the numbers compared to last year, it's incredible how much Florida's advanced, considering we're still not thrilled with where their offense is. But again, this goes back to what I was talking about before. When you have the three gimme games, your offensive stats get inflated. And so there, one reason their offensive stats are a lot better than they were last year is who they play. Again, I am all in on what Dan Mullen's doing. I think he has changed the culture here. I think he's got things going the right direction. I think it's going to be really fascinating to watch and see what they're able to do when they've had a full year to develop athletes and to teach these guys and they get better acclimated. But, you know, at the same time, they are what they are. And are they better than FSU? Not according to the recruiting services. This was in my picks column, or will be in my picks column, sorry, on in Friday's paper, or Thursday. No, Thursday. We moved it up a day to give you a special Thanksgiving treat. The average ranking over the last 4 years for an FSU class is 5.8. So a top six class every year. The average for Florida is like 13 or 14, somewhere in there. They really recruited well, and it just hasn't panned out for them. And look, I can sit here and tell you all the things that I think need to happen for Florida, and I can tell you all the things that Florida needs to do in this game, but you know what they are. They're the same as they always are. They need to establish the run. They need to make it so Felipe doesn't have to feel Brian Burns all the time because he's just pulling his ears back and running, rushing in. They need to not turn the ball over. They've had 11 turnovers during this five-game losing streak compared to six for FSU. You know, FSU during this run has averaged 308 yards a game. That's nothing. 308 yards a game is, I don't know where that'd put you in the NCAA, but not high. But that FSU hasn't done it with offense. They've done it with defense and turnovers. And that's what's killed Florida. They had a pick six 2 years ago, four years ago. They had a pick six last year. And that's what Florida's problem has been, is they've really played poorly. They played probably, like, I'm not going to say they played worse against Alabama 2 years ago when they got beaten really bad. Alabama was great. I mean, Applebee wasn't good in that game. That hurt them, you know. There's no doubt. The worst games they've played in the last 3 years under McElwain, to me, were the FSU games. They were just awful. And really extend that all the way back to the first year Will Muschamp, when they had like 130 yards of offense against FSU. I mean, they've just played badly in 5 years against FSU. Really, 7 years. The one exception was the game in 2012 where Florida just out-physical Florida State. And I don't know that they're going to be able to out-physical them Saturday. I think they could. You don't want to lose the physical battle, but you can't. If you win it, that's great, but you got to at least break even on it. And then you got to win by scheming, and you got to win by execution. And you got to look at Florida State. Not the players don't, but if you're handicapping this game or looking at this game, what you look at is the fact that Florida State this year, some of the results are just mind-boggling. I mean, how bad they've been. Don't forget, this team should already be eliminated from bowl consideration. They should have lost to Louisville. Louisville's awful. They had that game won, and they made a boneheaded decision and a boneheaded play. Threw a pick on first down when all they had to do was run the clock down to almost nothing and then didn't cover. And that's what the when FSU's had some success offensively, they do hit some big plays. I looked it up. I said, well, I bet you that they're really good in big plays. And I looked it up, and I can't remember where they were, but it was way down the list in the NCAA standings. I want to say in the 70s maybe, in big plays, which are considered 10 yards or more. But they always seem to hit one, you know, that gets them in a game or allows them to win in the rare cases. The Louisville game, certainly. The Boston College game, certainly. But they should have lost the Boston College game. Now, they found ways to win those games. Louisville handed it to them. Boston College goes for it on 4th-and-1 and gets it. That game's probably over. They decided not to. It was a tough call. I'm not saying it was a wrong call, but it certainly would have changed the game. You figure your defense can hold up and not give up a 74-yard touchdown pass. But when you look through the entire thing, you go, wow, they've had an awful season. Florida should be okay in this game. But they've got momentum going because they just won a game and they're all dancing. They're all happy. Locker room was excited. They're ready to go ruin Florida's chances of going to a New Year's Six bowl game. They're also ready to get themselves eligible and get some swag, even if it is a crappy bowl. And it will be because it's 6-6. You're not going to a great bowl game. But that game Saturday, I think, changed a little bit of the momentum in that regard. But still, Florida's team, their talent's better. Florida's team is better. Does that make sense? Because when you've recruited the way they have and you're 2 years in a row going 6-6 at best, and that's if they win. Because don't forget, they had to reschedule last year, Hurricane game, just to get bowl eligible. And then this year, they are on the verge. They have a chance not to be. That's underachieving, man. And I think Willie Taggart has a situation where he's trying to change the culture over there, but I'm not sure what they're trying to change it to. You know, he's talked already about players quitting. I think Dan Mullen has changed the culture here. He's still got a long way to go to get it where they want to be a championship team, but the culture has changed, and people understand what's expected of them. Of course, I thought that about Jim McElwain 2 years ago, too. I thought Jim McElwain had got things where he was, and he kind of had. He had things going in the way he wanted it to go internally, in the offices, things that, I wrote a big column about this at SEC Media Days, in terms of the way things were expected, not instead of you having to figure it out. The problem was there were a lot of other things going on in a negative way, and we don't need to reiterate all those. Okay, so it is a. This is what I'm writing for Saturday, so giving you a little hint. This is the biggest game of the year for Florida. And to me, it's not even there's not even a close second, because yeah, was LSU huge and Florida winning that game was big? Yeah, it was big. It certainly was the game that you're going to remember probably from this year. This game's bigger. It's bigger for a lot of reasons, and one of the number one from selfish is how good their bowl game gets. And again, if they win, you've got to root against chaos, because if chaos happens, like say Northwestern wins the Big Ten championship and Pitt wins the ACC champion, but they still let Clemson in, you know, to the playoff, or you know, there are things that can still happen that would knock Florida out of any kind of New Year's 12 bowl game. You could end up with Florida UCF. That's a real possibility. If you lose this game, now there's a lot of questions about whether the Cap One, Citrus, whatever you want to call it, I don't even know what it goes by anymore, would want Florida again for the second time in 3 years, and whether the Outback, like I've heard different stories that there's a rule that you can't go twice in 3 years, and I've heard there's not a rule, but you could be looking at Gator Bowl. I think for this team, 8-4 and a Gator Bowl berth would be kind of meh. Yeah, that's okay. It's a start. But it wouldn't, I think 9-3 Peach Bowl would be totally different. Playing in that stadium, the stadium that houses the SEC title game, I think people would be overly excited. I think people say, man, we got it going. it's going in a great direction. So it's a huge game. It's a huge game for recruiting. It's a huge game. And again, we asked Dan Mullen about this, and he said, look, I don't think many guys make their decision based on who wins the game. And I agree totally. I think he's absolutely right about that. But it's another element in the recruiting situation in that you say, okay, I'm trying to decide between Florida and FSU. Neither one's really got it going on that much. You know, neither one, you know, FSU's 6-6, Florida's 8-4. You know, they're about the same. I'm going to go where it's easier academically. I'm going to FSU. I'm going to go where there are more girls. I mean, this is a fact of life, man. Florida State was a girl school, and they've got more women going to school there, and they've got more. Well, obviously, you add in the FAMU. That has been a recruiting factor for years. I can talk to anybody about that, and they'll tell you that. I'm going to go there. That's what matters to me. You know, so there are things in play here. I hope I wasn't being sexist in any way. I'm just talking about what 19 and 18 year old kids are looking at. Okay, so this is a big game. And I'll tell you that there are a lot of people in the Gator Nation that are very, very nervous about this game. They feel good in terms of having the better team, but this is also a team that trailed South Carolina by 17, trailed Vandy by 18, got hammered by Missouri, got hammered by Georgia in the second half. I mean, they know they don't have a great team. This isn't Tebow walking through that door with that 08 team. Now, the 08 team played a much better team at FSU. FSU was ranked in the top 25. I think they were 8-3 going into that game in 08. And Florida beat them pretty badly. And Florida beat them, had that great run under Urban Meyer, where they didn't lose. They went, let's see, 05, 06, 07, 08, 09, so 5 in a row, and then lost in 010. So I've been kind of rambling here about this Florida State game. But there's so much going on. And I wanted just one more thing about last weekend, and I wrote a little bit about this. That was a perfect weekend for an illustration of why college football is the best thing in the world, okay? It is just such a great thing, because here you had a weekend where everybody's like, there's trash this weekend. There's nothing going on this weekend. It's any good. The one game, Notre Dame-Syracuse could be a really good game. Well, guess what? It was the worst game of all. But we had so much going on. It was so much fun to watch college football this weekend. It was a blast between Ohio State and Maryland. You kept looking at Coach Meyer and just wondering if he was – what is wrong with him? He had his hands like he was trying to hold his head on half the game. And I felt bad for him. I was rooting for Maryland, but it still was – and boy, that crowd went nuts every time they showed the score and Maryland was ahead. That is a wound that has not healed and may never heal. I'm not sure the wound of Florida and Meyer, the Florida fans feel from Urban Meyer will ever heal. That was a good illustration of it. They were cheering crazily. It wasn't because there was an upset going on. It was because Ohio State was losing. Certainly disappointing way to end that game. Interesting fact I just saw, or I don't know if it's a fact, but I saw this anyway. It was on Facebook, so it may not be right, or it was on Twitter, that if you saw the last play, the two-point conversion Maryland went for to win the game, guy was wide open. He just made a bad throw, and it fell harmlessly. It turned out the referees missed a call that it was an ineligible guy downfield, and it shouldn't have counted, even if it had counted, but it didn't count because he didn't catch it anyway. Does any of that make any sense? All right, let's take a break. We'll bring on the HBC. Steve Spurrier will join us right after we take a break here on the Duly Noted Podcast at Gatorsports.com.
At Vistar, we believe in better. Better convenience. So members can bank any way they want. Whether it's at a branch, on a mobile device, or at one of more than 20,000 fee-free ATMs across North America. We believe that people have better things to do with their time. If you believe that convenience is better, join Vistar. We never forget that it's your money. All loans subject to approval, insured by NCUA.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back to the Duly Noted Podcast, Gatorsports.com. It's a real pleasure to be joined by Steve Spurrier, of course, the head coach of the Orlando Apollos. You must be getting excited. You're getting near the start of training camp there for them.
Yeah, we got a mini camp planned in mid-December, around December 10 through 16, something like that. So hopefully we can introduce a few ball plays to our team. We've actually got a quarterback draft that's going to happen next week. So there'll be a little news in the paper about all the quarterbacks that will be playing for each team. But anyway, yeah, we're fired up. We got a good bunch of guys, and we don't know exactly who our quarterback will be yet, but we'll know more about it probably in a week or so.
Was this something that was in – I know you talked about it for a while, getting back into it in that way, and you kind of didn't want to do it, but then this perfect situation came up. Was it just too good to turn down?
Exactly, Pat. You know, I never disliked coaching. I just didn't want to recruit for 6 months and sure. Try to coach for the other 5 months or something. But yeah, this is the perfect scenario. It's in Orlando. It's in Florida. We play 10-12 games, hopefully 12, two playoff games, 10 regular season. And we practice for a month, and we play for about 3 months. So it's a 4 to 5 month job, and I can get in and out of Gainesville and Crescent Beach and I still be ambassador here in Florida. So I appreciate Scott Strickland and President Fox saying, go do it. So, yeah, we're all looking forward to it.
How have you liked being ambassador, consultant, whatever you want to, whatever they call it over there? How has that gone for you?
Oh, it's gone very well, I think. Hopefully I've added a little bit here and there. Certainly it's not a strenuous job. It's not a lot of got to be here, got to be there. But, yeah, I've enjoyed just being part of my alma mater, the University of Florida. It's been so good for me my whole life, and be able to come back to Gainesville and do this is really, really neat. So many coaches, when their career is over, if they could do what I'm doing now, they'd be very happy. A lot of these guys, they go live at home somewhere, and they never get back to their university, and they get sort of lost. So anyway, I'm not lost yet. Hopefully I never will be, because I got somewhere to go, and that's here at the University of Florida.
Obviously, I think you've enjoyed this year watching Dan Mullen, certainly better than what it was going on last year at Florida, but just your thoughts on what Dan Mullen's been able to do and watching a little bit of offense finally.
Yeah, Dan and his staff, they know what they're doing. I mean, they were successful at Mississippi State, and hopefully we're going to have a big recruiting class this year. That's always the first step to success in college football is recruiting. But after that, Nick Savage, the strength coach here, is as good as anywhere. Dan and his staff, I think they're as good as anywhere. So we've got a fighting chance. Dan will tell you, he inherited a lot of good players here. Now teach them how to play, how to win, and all that was what was needed done. And we got a huge game this Saturday, Pat. We really need to go up there and beat those guys. Hopefully real good, but just make sure we get a win over these guys because it's been 5 years.
Yeah, and somebody asked me one day recently, I said, why do you think Steve Spurrier didn't have much success in Tallahassee? I go, did you know the teams that he was playing against? I mean, those guys were unbelievably talented during that stretch in the 90s, weren't they?
The 12 years I was here, Pat, 11 of the 12, FSU was in the top four in the nation. Most of the time, they were either one or two in the nation when we played them. And yeah, we didn't have a lot of success up there. We got a tie one day, though, so that was
right.
Better than losing them all.
Right.
But we won the one that counted. I tell everybody they did beat us more than we beat them, but when all the marbles were on the line, we brought home the bacon from New Orleans, and we were national champs after that one.
What was it like going up there to play there? Because, I mean, the atmosphere that Dan Mullen's going to run into up there is not going to be anything like it was back in the 90s when, I mean, that place, I was there for all those games. It was electric.
It was loud, and they play their seminal little songs, but we had our chances to win a couple up there that we let get away, and that's just how it happened. We played a lot of close games. We won our share and maybe lost our share also, but winning SECs and trying to win that state championship, sometimes you can't win them all, And I think most Gators will agree if we had a choice between the SEC or the state championship, we'd take the SEC. But anyway, yeah, they're very good back in those days, and they were sort of snake bit. I think that they only won two national championships in that 14 years they were in the top four in the nation.
So have you given Coach Mullen any ball plays? You drawn up any for him yet?
No, he's got plenty. He's got plenty. I've not tried to interfere. They don't need my help down there. They know what they're doing.
Well, they've done a great job, and I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing now. Is it going to be the same style of offense you ran here, more like what you ran at South Carolina when you're down there in Orlando?
Oh, we'll try to do whatever our talent will allow us to. It'll be a combination, though. There's a lot of new ball plays everybody's doing with that run-pass option stuff and a lot of the quick guy reverses and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I think all the teams in the Alliance will have an offense, hopefully like the L.A. Rams, the Kansas City Chiefs, and the New Orleans Saints. So we'll try to model our offense after those three teams.
Did you stay up and watch that game?
I stayed up through about three quarters. But I tell you what, there was three defensive touchdowns also the game. So it wasn't a completely offensive guys going up and down the field all the time.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was certainly fun to watch. Steve Spurrier, the head ambassador at Florida, and of course the head coach of the Orlando Apollos. We'll be right back with more of the Duly Noted Podcast at Gatorsports.com.
The Gators are definitely on a roll under Coach Mullen, and next year should be even better. Winning is great for the program, but not for everything. Did you know what winning also does? It creates difficulty finding hotel rooms around game day.
Oh, no.
Most hotels triple their normal rate and charge at least two nights minimum.
What?
And if the Gators really start winning, everything will be sold out way in advance.
No! No!
Have you ever thought about owning your own place in Gainesville to use for you and your friends and family on game day weekends? Call Betsy Pepin, the top realtor in Gainesville and sponsor of the Duly Noted Podcast at 352-226-8474. And she'll help you find that perfect place for whenever you come to Gainesville. And when you're not using the place, she'll Airbnb it and take care of all the details. Betsy makes it easy for you to enjoy game day weekends instead of paying five-star rates for a one-star motel. Own your game days next year. Call Gainesville's number one realtor, Betsy Pepin, today. 352-226-8474. 352-226-8474.
Okay, this is the time on Sprockets When We Dance. We talk about the spreads for this week. The Florida opened at 4 over FSU, has gone actually up to 5.5. Not a lot of confidence in the Noles, at least in Vegas. Georgia, 17-point favorite over Georgia Tech, which seems a little high to me. There is a school of thought that Georgia Tech could give Georgia fits because the option is hard to play against. Guys taking your knees out all the time. It is difficult. And Georgia Tech's been playing pretty well lately. I think Georgia will win. I think Georgia's talent is just too good. But it could be a lot of fun to watch. Michigan is only a 4-point favorite over Ohio State. And I think that's based on the fact that, obviously, the history of this series, what Ohio State's been rolling over them, or finding ways to win. Ohio State is kind of like that team that just finds a way to beat Michigan every year. That's part of it. I think the part of it that people feel like Ohio State can score, even though Michigan's defense is great. I don't see it. I think if I was a betting man, I would take Michigan and give the 4. Oklahoma's a 2.5-point favorite over West Virginia, which I think is a total toss-up game. It might be 70-69, something like that. But here is the one that I look at, and I always give you my lock of the week, and it's always wrong. So this is the game I'm giving you. What did I give you last week? I'm trying to remember what the one I gave last week. I know we broke even on Alabama, Mississippi State. But anyway, this is the one that looks to me like the no-brainer. UCF is only given 14 to USF. USF is in the tank totally. Now, they can make their season by knocking UCF off, but UCF's played better teams than USF. Not many, because they don't, again, they haven't really played anybody good. I did elevate them up to number 9 in my poll because some teams lost, and I was impressed with the way they played against Cincinnati, but I still would never put them in my top 4. Until you have to play, and it's not your fault, but you're not playing anybody. That's the bottom line. Look, Kerwin Bell's team at Valdosta State has scored at the minimum of 44 points a game. They're undefeated. Should I rank them in the top 4? You know, that's, you got to look at who you're playing. Maybe I should. So UCF only 14-point favorite. I think USF has kind of given up. Clemson 26.5 over South Carolina. That seems a little high too, based on just this. South Carolina's shown they can score some points. Now their defense is terrible, which is so unusual for young Will Muschamp. But it is the way it is. Vandy is a 3.5-point favorite over Tennessee. I had a hard time picking that game. You have to wait until Thursday to see who I ended up picking. In fact, I listened to Robbie for a little advice. A&M favored over LSU at home. That, to me, is the most intriguing game in the SEC. One of the most intriguing games in the country. I'm fascinated to see how that... Now, there aren't a lot of ramifications, although LSU... And you probably should be rooting for A&M. Look, the bottom line is Florida's got to win this game to have any chance of going to a New Year's Six Bowl, which is important. It's an important step. As Dan Mullen said, it would be huge if they got into it. They've got to win this game or all bets are off. It doesn't matter what happens elsewhere. But if you want to kind of make sure, it'd be nice if A&M knocked off LSU and made them the same record as Florida with a loss to Florida. Might elevate Florida into a better bowl. But a 2.5-point favorite. A little surprised by that. Hard time picking that game as well. And then Notre Dame was an 8-point favorite opening up against USC. It's gone up to 11. That is going to be interesting to see. I don't think Clay Helton's going to get fired, but we did see some firings this week. McIntyre at Colorado let go. Kurt Roper's the interim head coach there, believe it or not. And you're going to continue to see coaches let go in college football because it's just the way it's firing season, you know, and we'll see what who gets hired to replace him. Again, I know he's a friend of mine. I think the world of him. All I know is what Kerwin has done offensively everywhere he's gone. I don't know why a Division I Power 5 or not even Power 5, like a USF type, not USF. I'm not trying to get Charlie fired, but somebody like that, maybe even somewhere like Louisville, you know, where I guess we'll see what happens there. But you know, go get Kerwin. You're gonna score a ton of points. He knows what he's doing offensively. Yeah. Nobody wants to listen to me anyway. All right, let's get to three things. It's time for it right now. Three things.
It's time for three things.
Number one, yes, I stayed up and watched the Chiefs-Rams game. Yes, I found that to be the most entertaining NFL game I've ever seen in the regular season. No, it didn't really mean anything. That's what I kept telling myself. I said, watch this for the entertainment value, but the winner of the game doesn't really matter. You're not even in the same conference, so it's not even home field on the line. You win one of the teams 9-2, one's 10-1. Whoop-de-doo. That's what makes the NFL different from college. It still was great. The atmosphere was unbelievable. The offenses were incredible. The defenses made gigantic plays in the game. It was everything you want a football game to be, except there was nothing really on the line. And that's what makes college football better, in my opinion, certainly different. Who won that game really didn't matter. You know, they don't have home field advantage in the Super Bowl, and that's where they would meet again. Secondly, you know, I've been kind of poo-pooing the whole Tiger Phil thing, which I don't even know what day it is. It's this week. It's pay-per-view. I'm not going to buy it. If it was on and I was watching football, I might flip it over for a few minutes just to see what's going on. And then I saw the HBO special on kind of setting it up, and I got more and more intrigued. I was kind of like, I wish I was watching this, but no, I'm still not gonna. They did a good job, though, as HBO does with everything, of getting you to want to watch it. And if you haven't seen that, just watch that and then find out who won. But again, you talk about something that doesn't mean anything. It means something to two people, Tiger and Phil. You know, there aren't that many of us out there who are 100% in Phil's corner or 100% in Tiger's corner. I think most people kind of like them both. And they want them both to be in contention. They want them both to have a chance to win every week because that makes golf better, right? But it's not like we're all, you know, like we're, this isn't Auburn, Alabama, where you're born one way and that's the only way you think. I would find it mildly entertaining with no real stakes except one of them gets $9 million or whatever it is. Is that what it is, $9 million? It's even less on the line than the Chiefs-Rams game was. Finally, number three, college football has always been trying to become the no-fun league. And it really, this week, we saw a lot of it. On the one hand, we brought Les Miles back, and his press conference was classic Les Miles, where he just totally lost his train of thought at one point. And it was almost embarrassing, but it was Les Miles, you know. He is what he is, and we're glad to have him back in the league. He ain't going to turn Kansas around. I've been asked that question by a lot of people. He's not turning them around. He may get them to be a little better, but it's a totally different situation than what he inherited at LSU. I believe he inherited a team that had won a national title, right, under Nick Saban. So he had the talent there and the talent that he was able to recruit in that state. Kansas is not exactly loaded with great players. Now, he'll go elsewhere, Oklahoma, Texas, and try to get guys in there. But really, does the hat command that much presence when, for these kids, you know, who all they know, like if you're a 17-year-old football player, you're like, oh, is that the guy that they fired at LSU? Is that the guy from the Dos Equis commercial? Yeah. You know, I think that is going to be a, I don't want to say disaster. They've had plenty of disasters, the biggest one being Charlie Weiss. But I think it's just going to be kind of a meh. We're going to pay attention because it's the hat. But on the other hand, I digress because I'm talking about the no fun league. You had a player at Texas giving a public reprimand and having to apologize for saying, oh, you sucks. Really? Really? That's where we are? You had two Arkansas players suspended for fraternizing with Mississippi State cheerleaders before a game? Really? That's where we are? There's nothing wrong with that. Unless you went to them and said, hey, we'll throw the game if you'll go out with us. Then you've got a problem. These guys see two pretty girls and start talking to them. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, if you were at the game Saturday and you saw a couple of Florida players and they were talking to some FSU cheerleaders, I don't think you'd be that upset. You would say, hey, guys, we got girls over here, Florida. But it wouldn't, like, be suspension worthy. You know when you suspend guys like that? When you're 2-9 and you have no chance of winning anyway. And then the latest, Kansas is not allowing Bevo on the field. One of the great traditions in sports, seeing Bevo run on the field. That sucks. Come on, man. It's only the second time in 73 years he hasn't been allowed to run on the field. And I'm rooting hard for Texas now. You don't keep Bevo off the field. All right, that's going to do it for our podcast. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with the postcast as we go back to once a week. Now that we're through with the season, which will be Saturday, we'll be through with the regular season. We'll go back to once a week, but we'll sneak some other ones in there, I'm sure. We appreciate everybody for listening and all the sponsors and all the guests we've had over the last year. We'll continue to have great guests. In fact, we're working on a good one for next week. We'll see if that works out. Until then, Pat Dooley, the sports columnist of the Gainesville Sun. I am deep, I am way back, and I am out of here.